You're listening to the Utah Man Podcast, bringing you the latest news and analysis for your Utah Utes. Now, your hosts, Cameron, Ryan, and Scott.
Welcome on into the Utah Man Podcast. On this episode, Utah gets ready to face the Washington State Cougars. I'm Cameron, and we got Ryan.
What's up, Ute Nation?
And Scott.
What's up, guys? Go Utes.
Was that a long bye week for you guys?
I hate bye weeks.
Oh, my gosh.
Any week without Utah football, it's hard.
It was, like, I know byes happen every single year, but I swear, like, it's weird when Utah isn't playing, but yet everyone else in the country is.
Especially coming off the last game against USC.
Ooh, off the big high.
Let's go.
Off the USC win.
Let's keep it rolling here. But there may be some players on the team that needed a bye week, you know. Eat up a week into their suspension.
Well, yes.
Who are you referring to, Scott?
There's a lot of rumors out there, isn't there?
There are some rumors. There are rumors, and I still stand by my comments last week, and I feel vindicated.
Just to kind of fill everyone in, we are talking about Tavion Thomas. There's a lot of smoke out there regarding his
and it's
status.
Not from the train.
Well, technically could be from the train.
Not the touchdown train.
Okay. But I mean, let's really get into this. Do you guys, let's just assume that Thomas is not a go for Washington State. What do you think that does to this rushing attack for Utah that really hasn't been able to pull out of the station?
Nice. Like very that? Well done, Cameron. I mean, I don't know that it does much because it hasn't pulled out of the station for about 6 or 7 weeks now. Has it?
No, it at this point, it should be condemned and be sold off for parts.
At this point, you ride the guys that are invested in the program. I don't know what's going on with Tavion, if it's his personal life, if it's school, if it's depression. I hope he gets the help that he needs. But from a football standpoint, you got to ride the guys that are there. You got to ride Bernard. You got to ride Jackson. You got to ride Jalen Glover.
Well, and Bernard was on crutches. There's rumors there about how healthy he is. And,
which surprised me because he finished the game.
Yeah, but again, like Kyle says, sometimes injuries, you know, they don't really show up until the next morning when adrenaline's kind of worn off and whatnot. But regardless, I think you're going to see... Glover. He's kind of taken a hiatus as they've been protecting that redshirt year, but I think they're going to have no choice but to rely on him heavily and JJ and then see what you get out of Bernard.
And then we've got Cam Rising, the leading rusher.
Yeah, I mean, we've kind of hinted at this. Cam can't be the leading rusher in this game against Washington State. I mean, that's a great weapon to have. Don't get me wrong. I'm not trying to say that you never run Cam. But I think you kind of have to dial that back, right? At least for the designated play calls for him.
You lose Cam, season's over, folks.
Mm-hmm.
He's the entire offense at this point. Passing, running, you got to protect him. And yes, he's still going to have his moments where he goes and he runs and he improvises. But as far as design runs from Ludwig, let's keep those to a minimum. And you gotta get this run game going because again, a few weeks down the road, you're looking at that Oregon game, and boy oh boy, did they look pretty impressive against UCLA, where UCLA was coming off a bye week and could not slow Oregon down. So it's gonna be interesting. They've got to get the run game going, and this is a great week to do so. And let's be honest, it's gonna be like freezing cold mm-hmm. up on the Palouse.
At least it's not going to be snowing. It's going to be cold. But
you're going to want to run the ball. I don't think Rising's going to want to throw the ball 45 times in this game. They got to get stuff going on the run game. and almost alleviate some pressure off of Rising, so he doesn't have to do everything week in and week out. Well, let's break down Washington State and what the Utes are going to be facing this this Thursday evening. How do you feel about a Thursday night game?
So I hate Thursday night games, for the team. It does help that they are coming off a bye week, so I definitely think that helps. But I do hate Thursday night games, especially traveling, because if you look at it, Utah really leaves Wednesday to fly to Washington, so you're really missing out on 3 days. And I know Kyle has talked about that a lot, how normally when they have a bye week and then a Saturday game, they get 2 full weeks to kind of get that game ready. And this week, I think he said they only gave him 2 days off.
Yeah,
they started
Tuesday, Wednesday of last week.
Started practicing for Washington State last Thursday, which would have been like a Monday.
A full week.
Yeah.
But the good news is you also get on the tail end, you get a few extra days to prepare for Arizona.
Because they'll need that for Arizona.
Not for Arizona's defense. We may need it for slowing down that offense that of Arizona.
But you know, going back to your question about Thursday, yes, I hate the Thursday game, but I think this is actually the best case scenario where it is coming off of a bye.
It is, but they're also coming off of a bye, so there is no advantage there. The other thing is, since we've joined the Pac-12, I feel like every team that has had something on the line that has gone up to Washington State on a Thursday seems to lose. It's just like it's that Pac-12 curse of the schedule. You know, a meaningless game just derails hope. So it's going to be interesting. Now, early on in the year, Washington State looked pretty good. Had some good wins. Mm-hmm. Kind of struggling over the last month or so. So this game looks more winnable now than it did early on in the season.
And I think offensively they looked better early on, and I think offensively they're struggling a little bit more now. And defensively, I believe they rank first in yards allowed in the Pac-12. So.
Well, and they've had some really good games and some good performances. You know, at least for a half at USC, they kind of played pretty well. Mm-hmm. and kind of held USC in check, and that game kind of got away late. You know, but they've lost three out of the last four, with last week losing 24-10 against Oregon State. Their one lone win is against Cal, which, I mean, everybody but Colorado seems to be Cal, so... But they did have one outlier. They hung with Oregon 44-41 early on. What was that week? That would have been week three of the season. But outside of that, yeah, they're not trending in the right direction, which is good for our Utes, right? Hopefully the Utes can go up, take care of business, have a good first half, hand the reins over maybe mid to late third quarter to Bryson Barnes and let him freeze his tail off on the Palouse in the fourth quarter and come back home.
So I tell you, it does make me a little nervous going into this game. Cameron Ward, their starting quarterback for Washington State, is a phenomenal talent. And while he may not be up there with Caleb Williams, who is a Heisman hopeful, you know, hard to do, but he's talented and kind of has the same kind of body type where can extend plays with his feet, can throw the ball deep. It makes me nervous, though, because Kyle said that it's going to be a similar offense to what they saw against USC and even a similar offense with UCLA. And
yay!
Utah struggled with those types of offenses. And this isn't USC. I'm not trying to say that this is the exact same.
But it's the same style of play.
Yeah, they're going to spread the field out. They're going to play multiple wide receivers. What is it, like a 12 personnel set that I have to run a lot out of. I think for me, for this defense, because we want to see this defense continue to grow, that's kind of where I get nervous, is how much did Utah's defense improve in this off week?
Well, so today, Jonah Ellis commented that... the defense has been simplified, and that they have cut down on just the sheer amount of play calls and I think schemes that they've been trying to run, which we saw in the second half of that USC game, right? They simplified things and almost just kind of went back to a more aggressive instead of, I mean, early in that USC game, what was the D-line doing? They're playing patty cake with the offensive line and just standing.
Trying to not let him escape.
Yeah.
But not get to him.
Which ultimately let him escape because he had so much time.
Yeah. No pressure whatsoever.
And absolutely just killed the Utes. Well, second half comes and you saw, even though it wasn't a dominant performance defensively in that second half, but there was at least aggression. Mm-hmm. There was aggressive pass rushing. And I think. Man, I don't know why, but I feel like we've just abandoned letting our defensive ends just go after the quarterback and just let them be aggressive. We've got guys, yes, we're young, but we've got speed. We've got guys that can get around the corner. This idea that we're just going to keep everything in front of us clearly has not worked, and it really hasn't worked at all season long, going even back into last season. I hope this simplification that Jonah's talking about is more of just go after the quarterback, create havoc. Whether you're getting him or not, get him on the run, get his timing off with these wide receivers, and just create some havoc and allow this secondary to maybe go make some plays, because this other idea clearly is not working. So. Hearing those comments from Ellis is actually pretty encouraging for the defense.
Well, and I think ultimately with this defense and like teams like a USC, UCLA, it's all about just not letting them do whatever they want on you. And I think that's just where I want to see the improvement, because the whole UCLA game, the first quarter and kind of a lot of the first half against USC, I mean, USC just did whatever they wanted. And it's just that the defense can just kind of start slowing teams up, I think, is a sign of progress.
Which we saw in the second half, which I think was alluded to in the post game of that USC game, that Scally, you know, dialed some things back to make it a little more simple. And it seems like they're going to continue to head that direction. So if we saw the progress in that second half, and, you know, let's just hope it continues.
Okay, so I got a question, bye week question here. Are defenses in general, just in college football, down? Meaning, are there great defenses left in college football?
I think that's a really good question. I think the game has changed so much that offense is really emphasized in the game and in the rules. You know, a lot of scoring helps.
Fans viewership. Fans love when those high scoring.
Exactly. Games. Right. And so I think just by nature of what, you know, football in America, you know, if you look at pro, look at college, that's just kind of where this game is going towards.
Yeah. I mean, because if you look at this defense from Utah, statistically, it's still ranked as the top defense in the Pac-12. But from a U fan's perspective, you'd say this is a down year. This is a bad Utah defense. Right. So if they're still ranked at the top of the conference, it just tells you everybody else doesn't have a defense either. And outside of maybe a few teams like an Ohio State, Alabama, and I don't even know how great Bama's is. I mean, they just gave up 40 some odd points to Tennessee. Defense is just not what it used to be. I mean, you're not going to see Kyle Whittingham holding most teams to 12 points anymore. Because offenses are too dynamic. The rules have been continually tweaked where, I mean, you breathe on a guy and it's pass interference, right? The offense has kind of all of the advantages against the defense throughout the game. And so it's kind of interesting. I almost think that there is just this slide where, yes, Utah's defense is not what it's been in the past, but that just might be in college football in general. And you're just what I guess a lot of us have been grown up on.
Mm-hmm.
Utah defense may not be there moving forward.
But look at when we first, the first few years where we were in the Pac-12 and we kept, you know, our emphasis as a podcast and as really as a fan base was, if the offense can put 30 points on the board, we should win, because there was an expectation that Utah's defense was going to hold the opponent to 28 or less points.
No doubt.
That doesn't happen very often anymore.
Well, when you have a pretty average defense and a special teams who can't stop anybody off a kickoff. I mean, legitimately, it's hard to keep teams under 30 now, right?
Yeah.
Because, I mean, there's just so many factors at play. And so it's interesting. It's just kind of a different mindset. Utah's still ranked at the top of the conference, but it's just there's just not a lot of good defenses really across the board. Washington State, they've got a decent defense, but Cam Rising and company should be able to go out and put 40 on the board again, mm-hmm. really without questions asked.
We got to go to a break, but I do want to point this out. Just looking up the stats, last year Utah's defense was giving up 349 yards a game. This year, 394. So only 50 yards difference between last year's team and this year's team.
Interesting, because it feels a lot more than that.
It's a lot more.
Maybe it's just because it's, and I don't know if this is statistically true, but it feels like we're giving up more big yardage plays.
Big plays.
A lot of home run plays, mm-hmm. Especially in the last 2 weeks. So we're up against a break. When we come back, we'll continue the discussion as Utah heads to Pullman.
Hi, everybody. I'm Katie Segal.
And I'm Kurt Sutter.
And welcome to our new podcast called PI, People, Influences, and Experiences.
Yes, it's sort of the get to know you at a deeper level, the who, what, when, where, and why you are, rather than what it is you do.
Absolutely. We're not going to talk too much about what people do. We just want to know about their families, where they come from, you know, what shapes their parenting if they have kids, what shapes their marriages if they're married. We just want to be really nosy. We want to get in there.
A deep dive into nature and nurture.
And we started it because there are a lot of people that we don't know that we are curious about.
Right. And I have no friends. So for me, it's, you know.
Trying to get them out of the house.
Listen to it on whatever you listen to. Podcasts on?
Yeah, podcast, homecast.
Your podcasting apparatus? Watch it on the YouTube.
He's aging himself.
All right, so Utah's coming off that big win against USC, and a big factor in that with Dalton Kincaid having 16 receptions, really dominating that USC defense. There's no way Washington State's going to let Kincaid catch 16, right?
Or I mean, will they?
Are they going to go with the USC defense? I mean, I hope it'd be awesome.
But can they stop him?
That's a good point. But I almost feel like teams, now that they've seen it and they've kind of allowed, like USC seems like they just kind of, they lived with it, right? They weren't really trying that hard to.
Oh, I don't know that I'd say that.
I mean,
that.
I know they in the second half they played a little bit more double team on him, a little bit more zone against him. But I almost feel like USC's plan was we're gonna let you kill us in the air.
I'm not sure USC had a plan.
You're probably right.
I mean, Yes, they changed some things up in the second half. It made zero difference. They took linebackers off of him. They brought in some DBs, and it didn't affect him, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, and that's why he's so good, is because he can run by linebackers, and he's still got good size where, you know, some of these smaller DBs just can't defend him.
Well, and you can see he does it all over the field. You saw it. The seam pass down the middle. You saw the exceptional pass he made on the sideline where he got the foot down and where they initially ruled it was incomplete. He's that good. I don't think it really matters who they put on him. He's like the Travis Kelce of college football.
Yeah. Well, so who was it? Somebody actually compared him to that, to Travis Kelce. He's the most college quarter or tight end that would be equivalent to mm-hmm. what Kelce is to the Chiefs. And And so that's where I just think, yes, is there going to be an emphasis on him to slow him down? Oh, you betcha. Will it be enough? I don't know. And the other aspect is, if there is that much attention being placed on him, then Devon Vele, Money Parks, Solo, Catch Enos, all need their opportunity. I mean, they all need to step up, right? Because they're going to have that opportunity. And again, I think the running game is, this has got to be the game that kind of kickstarts the run game. I don't care who it is. I don't care if it's Bernard. I don't care if it's Glover. I don't even care if it's JJ. Somebody step up and win the job, for crying out loud. Bernard, we all know Bernard wants it. Well, then go do it. Go take it. It's right there. Tavion is giving you guys every opportunity to earn this starting spot. Someone's got to do it.
If the run game can pick up and the pass protection that can carry over from the USC. I mean, the pass protection they gave Cam at US against USC was phenomenal. If they can continue to do that, whether or not the run game picks up or not, if Cam has all day to find somebody, he's going to find somebody.
Yeah, he is. And in reality, right? Kyle Whittingham said today, you just got to get the job done, right? Whether it's through the passing game, through the run game. I guess what I'm looking at, Utah should win every game left on the schedule, I think pretty convincingly, outside of that Oregon game. But in the Pac-12, and I know home field advantage is important in every league and in every sport across the country, but it seems like in the Pac-12, if you're like a good team, going on the road and beating a good team on their home field is tough.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, not many teams come into Rice-Eccles and beat Utah, right?
Mm-hmm.
Autzen has the longest home winning streak in the Pac-12 and one of the longer ones in the country, right? It's because not a lot of people go up there and beat Oregon. Even when they haven't been great, it's just a tough place to play. So after seeing that UCLA game and knowing, man, that's just a tough place to play in general, a passing game, and even an elite passing game from Cam, I don't think gets it done. I think you've got to be able to, because what is Utah's foundation, right? It's run the ball and drain clock.
Mm-hmm.
If you can sustain long drives and keep Oregon off the field, giving them less possessions, keeping that offense from being dynamic and scoring tons of points, I think that's how Utah's going to go win that game. I don't think they're going to win by, 52-51 up at Oregon. They've got to be able to run the ball, drain some clock, and maybe shorten it a little bit, because again, that our defense against those guys makes me a little nervous.
Which was the when you look back, the downfall really of the UCLA game, because Chip Kelly, when he was at Oregon and now at UCLA, they don't care about running the clock. Their time of possession, it's all about scoring quick. And Utah allowed them to have a lot of possessions because we did not run the ball. So if you can establish a running game, now's a good time to do it.
I totally understand where you guys are coming from. I think you guys got to remember, Oregon's what, 3 weeks away? And that's a long ways in college football. 3 weeks is a long time.
There's a strong possibility the Auburn Bo Nix could be in a rut by then.
Okay, we've had Fernando on the podcast a couple times. You know, to get the curse out of Utah, is there any way to put a curse back into Bo Nix?
Yeah, just send him his highlights from Auburn. I think would get the job done. No, I mean, but he's playing at a pretty high level right now, which is, I mean,
no, they are.
There's talk that he's in, put himself in the Heisman conversation, which is absolutely bonkers to think. But yeah, you're right. 3 weeks, a lot can happen. What, maybe injuries, just teams just kind of getting into a rut. So yeah, there's a lot of football to be played before that one, and the Utes have to go and take care of business in Pullman, because if you trip up in Pullman, the season's effectively over. Even if you go to Oregon and beat them, I still don't think that gets you into the conference championship.
Yeah. And so I think for me, the next couple of games leading up to Oregon is just what can Utah improve on to get ready for that Oregon game? Let's take a quick break. When we come back, let's recap of what's going on in the Pac-12 and give our picks. All right, so this is a crazy weekend in the Pac-12. As we've kind of talked about, Oregon beats UCLA 45-30, and it wasn't even that close in the game. It felt like Oregon just ran away with it in the first half. A completely different team than what the UCLA team Utah saw, but a lot of the credit goes to Oregon. They have it running well in Eugene, and I am nervous in a couple weeks for Utah when they travel up there.
The question is, was DTR humbled?
He wasn't flexing on anybody. That's for sure.
Stanford gets their first conference win against ASU 15-14. Oregon State completely destroys Colorado 42-9. I don't know who's going to take that Colorado job. That just does not look like it's going to attract top talent to coach.
I just think they're going to open up the Rolodex of retreads. And, I mean, Dave Christensen may get a go. You know, who else may get a go?
I heard Herm's available.
You know what? You know what they really should do? I mean, obviously, I don't want this to happen for our sake. But it's like, why does a Colorado not go all in on a Morgan Scali?
Maybe they will.
I mean, we've heard Scali's
or
name
Jay
come
Hill,
up.
Who's
that's the thing.
One of the top coaches. Yes, it's a lower level of football, but he's one of the top coaches, and he's been consistent at Weber. You know, like why don't they go after somebody like that who's young, could bring some energy into the program, and versus these dudes who are just don't do anything. I don't know.
Well, and
it is a tough job to hire for.
It gets you the Winningham tree. Which, pretty good.
Well, he's from this area. He's been recruiting. You know, I mean, it seems like from their perspective, like, why not? From our perspective, stay away, Colorado.
And then Washington comes back and beats Cal 28-21. When we look at the standings for the Pac-12, Oregon's on top with 4-0, and then you got a couple teams with one losses, UCLA, USC, Utah, and then Oregon State and Washington are right there with two losses. With no divisions for the championship game, it's really making this race really interesting, and I know there's a lot of talk about tiebreakers and what happens if there's three teams or even four teams that are tied at the end of the season. All I know is things I've been reading online is there is a push within the Pac-12 fan base to keep UCLA and USC out of Vegas. And it's kind of cool.
Right? Well, they're abandoning us. Why? I don't think anybody wants to see especially both of them in the conference title game. So it is good that Oregon was able to win that game, and it puts them in the driver's seat. So at the very least, you have just one of them in that game.
But it is cool to see fans of other schools that are pushing for, if their team doesn't make it, Utah and Oregon in Vegas. I like it because I hate the Southern California schools.
Well, so if we want to... You know, anybody that's still listening to the podcast, if we want you to drive on to oncoming traffic, should we discuss the breakdown of these tiebreakers for who can get into the Pac-12 title game? Because the odds are not great that Oregon and Utah end up in the title game.
It has been a hot topic on Twitter this past week, probably because Utah didn't have a game.
Right, and in true Pac-12 style, the rules are very vague and probably not very well written as far as, even reporters have been chiming in. Everybody's got a different story as far as does it get to option two? Do we stick at option one and how that's going to break down? Obviously, it's going to be a moot point for Utah if we don't take care of business the rest of the way. But yeah, it's an absolute mess.
Utah takes care of business, and USC beats UCLA. That's all we need.
You'd hope. You would hope that's all you need.
It'd but be nice so if both UCLA and USC could each lose one more time before they play each other.
It's not going to happen,
but it'd be nice.
It'd be nice if both of them lost three more games. I mean, that would be perfect, right?
In all honesty, it's the Pac-12. It's no guarantee that Oregon's going to beat Oregon State either. That's a rivalry game.
For sure. And yeah, I mean, there's still anything can happen, but does it not feel like this is almost a non-weird Pac-12 year? Because usually there's always weird stuff going on. Mm-hmm. We eat ourselves. We cannibalize ourselves, right? And you're not really getting that yet. And maybe we won't get it at all. But it does seem a little weird because normally it's happening.
Yeah, usually
now.
At this time of year, there's about three or four games where you're just like USC, you know, losing in Pullman or UCLA losing in Pullman or something weird.
I mean, USC, they're at Arizona, home to Cal, and home to Colorado before they play UCLA. Now, they still have Notre Dame to play. Probably not get a...
potential loss of
that won't do anything is UCLA.
It's not a conference, yeah. So it's really not going to affect... It's not going to affect this matchup. At Arizona seems to be the only possible loss for USC outside of UCLA. And Arizona could score points. I know everyone's kind of casting them aside. They're towards the top of the conference offensively, ranking wise. I mean, they're scoring points. They're pretty dynamic offensively. They're just as good as they are offensively. They're even worse defensively. But being that it's at Arizona, who knows? Maybe we get crazy that night and Pac-12 after dark and something crazy happens.
We can only hope.
All right. So UCLA, they've got Stanford. Stanford's playing better, maybe.
Is that home or away?
That is home. Then they're at Arizona State. Bit of a wild card. Arizona State's they've
depends
jumped
on the
up
Saturday
and beaten some teams. And then they've got Arizona, USC, and Cal. So I mean, there are some opportunities that UCLA could still stub their toe.
And who does Oregon have left?
They've got some potential L's on the now. Granted, they're leading the charge here. They've got no losses on the standings as of yet. They've still got to play Cal. They've still got to play Colorado. Those are both going to be easy wins. But then their last three, they've got to they've got Washington, which is a rivalry game. Washington can score points just like Arizona. Their defense, again, not great, but that is a potential interesting game. Then we're the week after. Maybe that bodes in our favor a little bit after an emotional rivalry game. And then another rivalry game after that against Oregon State in Corvallis. So you never know. There are some potential L's there.
Pac-12 after dark has yet to rear its ugly head.
So we'll see. Did the Pac-12 grow up and all of a sudden we're acting like a proper conference?
Nah.
Or is chaos still going to ensue?
Chaos is coming. You can feel it.
It's possible.
It's due.
Except for Utah.
Obviously, we got Arizona at home. We've got Stanford at home. We're on the road at Colorado. We could play naked against Colorado and beat them.
Let's not.
So, I mean, I would agree, but there's probably others who would not. But really, this Washington State game is really the last kind of trap game that I think Utah could even be at risk outside of Oregon.
So let's get into this Washington State game. Utah is favored by 8 points. The time we're recording this, Ryan, we'll kick it over to you first. Who do you got and what's your score?
At one point, Kyle was undefeated coming off a bye. It's not so anymore, but he's still very good. But I still like the odds. I still like our chances. I think Utah goes up there, gets the win, and covers the spread. I say Utah wins it 41-28.
I kind of like the way you're thinking, Ryan. I think Utes get this, and I think they cover. I think Utah wins big, actually. I think this offense is humming along. It would have to take a big effort by Washington State to kind of hold back Cam Rising and what this team's doing. I got Utah 42, Washington State 24. Scott, what do you got?
All right, I'm going big. I think the Ute train is coming out of the station offensively and defensively. Special teams, no. I still don't have any faith in special teams. We will still screw up a number of plays on special teams. But a simplified defense, Cam Rising's got all the confidence in the world. I think we're going to go up to the Palouse. I think we're going to hang 50.
Ooh, wow.
On Washington State. Final score, 50-17. Go Utes.
Oh my gosh.
That's what good teams do, boys. They take care of business against inferior opponents.
Ryan, where can people find you on Twitter?
At Drum and Feather. Drum, the letter N, Feather.
Scott, where can people find you on Twitter?
Yeah, UteMan _ forever. Let's go!
You can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at Utah Man Podcast. You can listen to us at our home at Utah Man Podcast. And anywhere you listen to a podcast, we are there. iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play. And hopefully, Scott, for once in my life, I'm going to say I hope you're right. Because a blowout like that would be amazing.
A stress-free game that looks good on to the voters.
Yeah, we do not need any Pac-12 after dark shenanigans.
Especially on a Thursday night. Have to get up for work the next morning.
In the words of Kyle Whittingham, leave no doubt.
Go Utes.
Go Utes.
Go Utes. You'll be tell I die kai.
We're good. Let's cut it.
The views and opinions expressed on this podcast are their own and are no way affiliated with the University of Utah.